Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Wedgehead Pinball Podcast. My name is Alan. I'm the host of the Wedgehead Pinball Podcast, co-owner of the Portland Pinball Bar Wedgehead. I'm here with my co-host, Alex the Waterboy, in his basement studio.
Howdy. Today, we're joined by our friend on the East Coast, Mitch. He's an operator who works under the name of Pinball Over Boston. Mitch, how are you doing today?
I'm wonderful, guys. Thank you so much for having me on the show. Big, big fan.
Oh, well, we're happy to have you. Yeah, so I guess I want to start just with off the top. You operate in Boston. What made you start operating pinball machines, and when did you start? And do you operate other amusement games as well, or are you like a strictly pinball operator?
Sure. I'm actually coming up on my 10-year anniversary. I can't even believe it.
But dude, congrats.
May of 2014. Thanks so much. It's like I try not to even say it out loud to jinx myself, because it's just like, I never want it to end. It's the best job I've ever had. But long story short, I was lucky enough to grow up with a pinball machine. My family got a Nitro Ground Shaker, Bally Nitro Ground Shaker, when I was about like 7 years old. So imagine 7-year-old Mitch, man, looking at that art package and playing that game. Like I was hooked for life, and I became like full-on obsessed during college. And then when I entered like the working world in Boston, there were pinball machines around, but they were all just broken and destroyed. It was one big operator that just was more quantity over quality and would just like dump, like rotate the same broken pinball machines everywhere. And you know, this is a long time. This is like early 2000s. So I would call the operator, they had their number on the game, and I would say, hey, I'm looking to play your games. Or I would try to report an error, and I would just get yelled at on the phone. I'm like, man, this is like...
Yeah, those are the bad ones.
This is like not a fun system. Yeah, exactly. So it was this terrible operator that kind of motivated me. Next to where I was working, there was a pool hall called Flat Top Johnny's, where this bad operator had some pinball machines that just were, you know, the type, just like completely abandoned, but like no tilt bob, barely working. But at the time it was like, all right, you can still kind of play it. So I was happy, but I got to know the owner and then asked him, I'm like, look, these are broken all the time. I can provide working games. I didn't even have games. I just sold something I didn't have. I said, let me bring you working games and I will curate a collection here. I'll try to run some tournaments. And he took a flyer on me and he said, yeah, bring in some games. And I had no idea what I was doing, to the point where I brought it. The owner was like, all right, bring in some games. We'll do something. And the other operator still had games here. And the other operator was like, what are you doing? You broke our contract. We had to like buy out their contract. It was kind of a nightmare, like just to get the ball rolling.
Mitch, tell me about this contract. Do you know much about it?
Of the bad operator? Yeah. So the big operator in the New England area, what they would do is just, you know, they would basically cold call on every single bar, restaurant, truck stop, anything, and just drop a couple games, and they would, their contract, I believe it was 8 years, and it would automatically renew.
Whoa.
And basically, if you tried to cancel it at any point, it would be a breach of the contract, and then you would have to pay them to take their trash games out. Can you believe that?
I've heard of similar, so I can believe it, but it's just insane. That's not something we've ever really touched on the show.
That's why you mentioned it, Mitch, and I was like, wait a second, hold on. You need to explain this.
That's insane. That sounds like mob, like shakedown tactics. You're like, hey, here's some shitty games. If you want them out of here, you got to pay us.
There's a restaurant owner that, you know, tried to do the same thing, like had this bad operator with broken pinball machines and was like, I want to bring in an operator that takes care of this stuff. And it was like lawyers had to get involved, and it was like, he basically had to pay them to take their junk away. It was
that's crazy.
So, but anyway, this level of operator inspired me to be like, well, it's this shitty. I can do it better than that. Eventually, I was able to do it at Flat Top Johnny's with just a handful of games. My first four games, if I remember correctly, was a High Speed 2.
Nice.
An 8-Ball Deluxe.
Very nice.
A Lord of the Rings. And an Austin Powers. I saved the best for last.
Dude, that's nice. Austin Powers, like, obviously us that have been in the hobby a long time, Austin Powers isn't one that comes up often, but I know that game earns, and that's a cool little lineup for your first four. That's a good variety. I like that.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. Like, at the time, I just didn't know what I was doing. I was like, well, I can get these games. I got them. I was not the best tech. I say that the only thing I knew how to do was ask for help and accept the help. There was just a lot of quality collectors and enthusiasts around Boston that would be willing and patient enough to help me. And like, I would try to make it easy for them to answer my questions. Like if I had a broken game on location, I would bring them the entire game to be like, can you help me with this? Just so they didn't have to drive into Boston and it could get fixed. And it was just, totally. You know, I've always held myself to the standard of like, nothing should be out of order ever. And if it is, you replace it. And it's like, that's the only way you can maintain a reputation, because the second that starts to slip, you're done.
Totally. You're dead on in what you just said as far as like, I don't think I've covered it on the Pinball Operators Spotlight series yet. A really good piece of advice for anyone that, good pinball operators already know this, but people that are considering it, maybe taking some of their own games, or they're listening to Mitch's story and they're going, oh, that sounds familiar. That sounds like my town where there's only broken shitty games, but I want to play good pinball. And the thing you need to know is you should have a couple of games that are working that you can rotate in. Because if you have a game that goes down with a major problem, the best thing you want to do is always have every game fixed within 24 hours or 48 hours or, you know, like reasonable. And obviously, like sometimes you have to order specialty parts and stuff, but your reputation is people walk into a place and they see games on and they see games playing well. And that is your whole reputation. So what's very helpful is if you have a few extra games. Like say you start a location, you have three or four games, maybe you have like six, but you need to be working. And if you're rotating games in and out, that's some advice that I would give to any operator. It's something that my business partner has been doing it for 20 years and he does that all the time. It's like, he always has a game that's like, oh shit, this is going to need massive board work. So it's like, swap it out. Right. And to the customer, it's just like, oh, it's time to bring in new blood, which you need to do anyway as an operator. That's more advice for new operators, is you do need to shuffle your lineups occasionally just to keep shit fresh. Even games that people love, it's helpful if you have like two locations, even just swapping them in between the two helps a lot as far as the earnings for both locations.
But yeah, that's awesome that you were able to just kind of, you know, fake it till you make it and got yourself into that situation.
Everyone
starts
that way.
That is going to be the name of my memoir, Fake It Till. Yeah. The only thing I had, I was equipped with just my extreme passion for pinball. And like, to me, anything less than 100% playing was unacceptable. Everybody compares it to like a sports car with a flat tire. It's like, what's the point of even driving it? So yeah, as I say, I started small at Flat Top Johnny's. It was like the four pinballs machines that I mentioned before that I had to pull out because the other operator was like, I will sue you if you keep these games here. So we had to get the other operator out, bring them back in like a month later. And then just like, as you said, like I didn't have the spare games. So it's like, I had to build up to that. And, you know, I still had a full-time job, but what happened was
I want to ask you that.
Yeah.
Real quick. Sorry to cut you off. I want to say, when you started, I see from your website that you have three main locations listed. You have Roxy's, Flat Top Johnny's, which you've mentioned, and Double Bowl, right? Then you said you're like, at the time, I had a day job, which I think also is how most people start. How long did you have a day job for? What did you do before? And how long before the route became your full-time job?
Sure. So before I was an operator full-time, I worked at a company called Gentle Giant Moving Company. So I started in college just as a mover, humping furniture around. And then...
That's good experience for moving pinball machines.
This explains a lot, honestly.
I swear, it came in handy. And from the trucks, I went into the marketing department, but just always had the passion for pinball. Started the two games at Flat Top Johnny's, but what allowed me to leave Gentle Giant and pursue operating full-time was a second location was opening up and they wanted a larger arcade. They saw my handful of games at Flat Top Johnny's, which was like a Golden Tee, a couple pinball machines. Another operator had a skee ball machine there, and Roxy's said, will you do this for us? And having the two locations with, it was not that many games, but Roxy's was kind of like a nightclub arcade, like a bar arcade where they were able to pack it in. It was such higher volume. And we had a very favorable split at the time because the owners, well, they were in the restaurant industry. They weren't in the arcade industry. So they offered us this great split. You know, when they finally opened, it was earning enough. And I joke that I wasn't making very much money at the moving company, allowed me to choose to focus on pinball full time, because I was realizing if I had set the standard of keeping these games working 100% every day, I needed to be in these locations like every single day. And I don't like to be in the location when it's open to the public. So it like, I couldn't have the 9-to-5 and commit fully to the pinball thing. I know other operators can do it and you kind of have to, but my situation was unique where two strong locations right out of the gate.
Yeah.
So I got really lucky, I guess, long story short.
Do you have a rough idea of how many games you had on location at between those two spots at that point?
Or how many games do you have now, really?
Yeah.
Like, how many have you built up to now at your three locations?
I think total pieces of equipment are probably like between 70. 70 to 80.
Okay. That's a lot.
Thanks, man. Yeah, it really, but it's grown so organically and kind of slowly. Where at Flat Top Johnny's, I said we started with two games, but like every month I would, you know, be in talks with the owner, be like, hey, we're gonna do a tournament this coming Sunday. Can I bring in an extra game or two? And he would say, sure. And then Monday would come and I wouldn't remove them. And then the next month, they'd be like, hey, we're doing another tournament. Can I bring in another game? So we like went from two games. Like by the time the place closed in COVID, I think we were up to like 12 pinball machines. They were back. It's a pool hall. We had games back by the pool tables because the owner is a pinball fan. And he also saw the community. There was no place like it. So he saw the people coming in and day out. Like you had your pool regulars and you had your pinball regulars. And, you know, he knew what it meant. And as I said, they closed in the pandemic. And when they reopened this earlier this year, it was like, I was thrilled to get the call of like, hey, we're going to be doing pool and pinball again. Will you be the operator? I'm like, oh my God. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Can you describe sort of your three locations and the different vibes of each one of these to people that aren't in the area and haven't been to them?
Sure. So my first ever location, Flat Tops, it was right by MIT in Cambridge. It's right next to where Google has their office, Microsoft. So it's like the tech hub. So there's a lot of foot traffic there with the work, after work corporate crowd. Then there's the student crowd from MIT a little bit later in the day. But then there's also a strong like cyclist community. It's really a mix of everybody there. Anytime you go to Flat Tops, it's kind of like the different crowd, but it's a good melting pot. But it's definitely, while it is an all ages place, and what I've seen, it's mostly adults. We can have like adult settings on games, the volume turned up a little bit. And then right up the street, literally a half a mile away, is Roxy's Grilled Cheese, which is you walk up, it's just a non-assuming grilled cheese storefront with a couple tables, but then it has the speakeasy door where you open up like the freezer door and then you enter the bar arcade area.
Oh,
very cool. Yeah, I think I've seen that place.
Yes.
Similar to like Sunshine Laundromat, right? With the hidden door type of thing.
Yeah, I believe Sunshine was first with their laundromat. And I wasn't part of that planning process. The owners were like, oh, we want it to be like the speakeasy vibe. But it really is cool when you open it up and see, and there are 10 pinball machines there. It's like, it's a tight space. It's not big. So it's really, I've crammed every single square inch I possibly can, but it's 10 pinball machines and about 30 arcade games, like with skee ball and all that. And that is a 21 plus all the time.
Yeah. So you're like a classic operator kind of now. You started because of your interest in pinball, but
yes,
for the listeners at home, because I've talked to people in DMs about this all the time, because they go, how come the only operator in my region, they just have these broken ass pinball machines? And I go, the reason they do that, even if they don't care about pinball, is because they're trying to win accounts. So they're like, maybe they operate pool tables, jukeboxes, some golden tees, some buck hunters or whatever. But a bar's like, hey, I want a couple of pinball machines. And to get that account and to win that business, they go, all right, I'll order some pinball machines and they'll throw them in and then just forget about them. What you're doing is like, I'm a pinball head, so I'm always going to make sure the pinball's around. And you're sort of doing the reverse. But that's why you end up with people that are like, because people are confused. I've heard this so many times. They're like, but why even buy them? Why even operate pins? Why even do it if you don't like pinball? And I go, because they're trying to get the account to make money on the jukeboxes and the pool tables and all the other shit. And so they're like, they look at it as like, okay, I'll buy a couple pins and just let them rot. Right. Like, I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying, like, that's just how it works.
Yeah. It's nice to see it go the opposite way for once.
Yeah.
Yeah. My world kind of came crashing down soon after I took over Roxy's and was the sole operator. COVID happened. That shut me down forever. And I listened to your story the other day on your episode where you went into what you guys did with your free play pod model, which I thought was really smart.
Yeah, that was a wild time.
And you guys obviously survived. It was a scary time because I went from like thriving business ready to take on an arcade to I'm completely out of business.
Did you rent any games?
I never did.
Okay.
I was asked a lot and, you know, I had plenty of games, but I was nervous if I'm being honest, because, you know, you have to get into a contract situation and, you know, what if something happens? Am I on the hook for tech support. And I was like, is it really worth it? So I wound up just, my extra games, I was just loaning them to friends.
And you're a good friend, Mitch. I mean, we definitely loaned some games. Yeah, like, because business partner Rhodesy ran out of storage space. He's never had to store all of his games at one time because he does have a storage space and he's got a house. Mm. And right, like, so he was stuffing games in my garage and other people's, but we started renting games, and Rhodesy still rents games to this day. I think what is interesting is what you just said. You're like, I'm nervous. And I understand that. It's funny because I think what the opposite is very, very true. There's a lot of home collectors in the country that are like, oh, I have to buy these games because there's no good pinball around me. I have to drive 2 hours to get to a location. And you're like, well, why don't you operate those games? Like, why don't you find your flat top Johnny's or your local bar that needs it, make the connection and put these games out? I mean, it's because a lot of those guys are terrified of how beat up these games are going to get on location. And so I find it interesting that you've been a route operator and you were afraid of like the home use environment.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, it was just a skip. My approach during COVID, I had a really smart idea. When COVID hit and I had to take all my games off location, I wanted to sell them before the prices spiked. So I sold them very, very low.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we were coming out of the pandemic, actually the timing worked out perfectly, where the Double Bowl Tap House, my other location, they were opening in May of 2021. It was a restaurant. Again, long story short, one of our league players that from Flat Top Johnny's was having a conversation with the bar manager of this restaurant group where they were trying to rebrand their restaurant. They went from a fancy steakhouse and they wanted more of a tap house vibe. So my friend of a friend was able to put in the word for me to get to be, you know, to go in front of the owners of the restaurant and pitch them on pinball. They have this beautiful upstairs balcony with them. I'm like, we can put a row of 11 pinball machines. They're like, no, we want like one pinball machine and like cornhole. I'm like, no. So
yeah, totally.
Like, you need more. Yeah.
But one of the parts I like about the job is sell pinball, because I think it does sell itself. You just have to present it the right way and like trying to understand what people maybe aren't connecting with. They're like, because I'm sure you guys see it all the time, like you have a free play location, hey, come play XYZ game. Oh no, I don't want to, I'm not very good, I'm not good at pinball, I don't want to play. It's 100%. Like, buddy, it's on free play. Trying to sell people on pinball,
the free play helps to get people in. That's one of the reasons why we did it, which brings me up to the next question. Is I want to talk about, you know, you're operating on a route, so your price per play, you know, model, and I want to ask you, like, what is the going rate for pinball? How do you price your games on location?
Great question. So for the longest, well, when I started 10 years ago, once I geared more towards like newer Sterns, like the year 2000 beyond, I was at $1 per play.
Okay.
And I back then I got pretty much roasted for it because, you know, an hour and a half north of us, there was an arcade that had 50 cent play on all their pinball machines. So people would be like, hey, you know, you can still play 50% pinball.
Yeah, if you drive an hour and a half away.
That's like, and just in Boston, that crummy operator I mentioned before, they had some 50 cent and 75 cent pinball around Boston. And people would look at my
piles of shit.
Like, hey, I could go play this broken game. I could go play this piece of shit for 50 cents. It's like, then go.
Yeah, go knock yourself
out. You have no idea how much that rings true to us, man. I feel the same way.
When I'm listening to your show, I'll be listening to your show in my car and I'll be like, oh my God, everything they're saying right now is just ringing so true. It's like, I connect with everything you guys share in your show, because I feel like we have the same similar experiences.
I want to say, like, I felt like on the East Coast for a while, it had been, you know, $1 play with Stern. I mean, Stern's been shipping games for over a decade now where $1 play is their standard recommended price. And what happens on location is people do this thing where they're like, everyone's trying to race to the bottom. The games get more expensive and pinball machines break. And hopefully you have a good scene or you can build a good scene. And so your machines are getting played, which is awesome because you're making money. But then the machines are breaking, so you're maintaining these games. And it's hard to make money on the games, especially when you're always reinvesting in new games and fixing them and all that stuff. And it's funny, but there's always someone in town or in any region where they're like, oh, I'm just going to charge a quarter less. I'm going to charge under market. And this will be cool because then I'll get all their customers will come to me. And you're like, I mean, it's cool if you're operating great games and you maintain them. But if you're just,
yeah,
again, not to talk out of turn about anyone in our region, but There are definitely operators that undercharge for their games, and so we deal with the same thing. Even though we're a free play arcade now, people will still go, well, I can go play this piece of shit over here all day, right? And you're like, yeah, but that thing's a piece of shit. Like, yeah. I mean, you can. Yeah. I don't know why you would, but there are some people that are so unbelievably cheap, and it's almost comical. Because I'm like, I really don't care. Like, pinball to me, also, Alex and I know you are as well, Mitch, it's like we're all accomplished pinball players. Like, we're all good pinball players. So, like, for us, pinball's like...
You bet your ass.
You're right. It's cheap, right? Like, it's like, the better you get at pinball, the cheaper it gets.
But
right?
What's interesting is a lot of the guys that complain about the price are very good players. And that's what drives me nuts, is when you see someone that you know can play, you know, a Jurassic Park for 20-minute games every single time, and they're complaining that it costs $1 a play. It's like, fuck off, dude. Like, that does not matter to you.
Yeah, it shouldn't matter to you.
You're talking about the difference of, like, literally 75 cents or something over an hour of entertainment. Like, if that's what's making the difference, maybe you should just be staying at home. Like, at the end of the day, and I don't know, I don't want to just keep seeing, you know, as a consumer, because I'm not an owner or anything of Wedgehead. I'm just a fan, and I don't want to just keep seeing prices go higher and higher, but the prices for playing pinball are, like, stuck where they were
still
30
low
years ago.
What's really funny about the hobby of pinball is that there's two extreme sides of it. There is the money doesn't fucking matter, the guys that have the space and the income to buy these crazy collections for their house, and they're buying $2,000 or $3,000 toppers, and they're modding their games, and they're doing all this crazy shit, and they're sending parts out to be powder coated and all this crazy shit, right? And then there's the people that play on location that could be the cheapest motherfuckers you'll ever see. You know, they're checking coin reject slots for free quarters, right? Like, they're trying to snipe games that kids match on and then walk away from, right? Like, they're trying to do all that corny shit. And it's funny because it's like, that's the same hobby. They exist in the same world, and it's so weird.
Yeah.
And even those guys that have the really expensive collections, they'll buy LEs or whatever and they'll mod them out. They'll go on location and go, $1 a play? I could just play my games at home. You're like, I guess since you already spent 50 or 60 grand, I guess you can. But it's just wild, the disconnect of money, like price per game. So,
well, it's also, one thing I wanted to mention, when Flat Top Johnny's reopened at the beginning of this year, my concept being so close to Roxy's, which has a lot of the new Stern Pros, I was like, let's try to go premium games at Flat Top Johnny's. So I got an Elton John in there, I got Elvira in there, and like Black Knight Premium, and I raised the prices. So I think out of the gate, Elton John was $2 a play with a bonus. It was like $4 for $5, I think it was. But it was, I wanted to just raise the prices a little bit to see what kind of resistance. And honestly, I think I lost customers. I think I really upset people.
So what happened with that?
Well, I'll tell you what happened. People played Elton John. That's been a very solid game. I've been very, as a player, I've enjoyed that game. As an operator, I've enjoyed that game.
It's awesome.
But yeah, I think by having high price games, premium games upon opening, I think just like it gave the location like bad word of mouth within the local pinball community, because it's like, well, I can go to other places. Flat Tops is right up the street from Pops's Pinball, which you know those guys, and they have, you know, they've got the 50 cent to a dollar price games, and it's like people just kind of wrote off Flat Tops. I think maybe it's all in my mind.
Yeah, knowing pinball players, I can definitely see that. I can definitely see how some people might just be immediately turned off if they hear that.
I'm going to say, like,
I just want to point out for like any listeners that don't know, Elton John at minimum is a 13 grand game. The fancy one's 15 grand. Like, these are ludicrously expensive machines when you're talking
right,
new JJ's.
Basically, two Stern Pros.
Yeah.
So you're basically like, hey, a Stern Pro, I'm charging $1. I'm buying two Stern Pros in one game. I could charge two, right? And that's simple math, but it doesn't math in pinball players' heads. They don't see the value proposition, which is what we struggle
with. Which is disappointing. I think some of the people that were like shitting the hardest about it were the ones that should do that math in their head of like, oh, this is a super high end game. And actually Elton John's a long player too. So
that's what
like,
I was also going
to
say.
They should see that value there. And that's, and it's frustrating to me that they don't, but I'm not about to get in the weeds with it, with the individual players. But just to circle back with the pricing, I've come down a little bit. So Jaws Premium just went into Flat Tops the other day, and it's $1.50 a credit, $5 for $5. So
okay, so like, if you buy five, you still get that dollar.
That's the thing to me. It's the other thing. If you're doing the price breaks, if you're doing the price breaks for like multiple credits, if you're there with a buddy or something, then you're like, oh, well, this is as cheap as it'll ever be. And you're probably happy as an operator because you know that thing's getting utilized more, you know, the time, the number of plays is going up. So it's like,
yeah.
I don't know. There's always like a, there's, people will complain no matter what you do, but.
Oh, we can have a whole separate podcast just on that. Just people just complaining constantly. But no, part of my thought with, but I got an Elvira House of Horrors and I put that at $2. And my thought was like, I hope nobody plays this because the second people do, it's going to fall apart. And then I have to fix it.
House. Speaking of games falling apart.
We wanted to talk about this
because my favorite topic.
I want to ask you, I see that you operate almost exclusively new games. I see that you have.
Oh, man, I knew you guys were going to give me shit for
no,
that.
No. I'm not. Hey, listen, I'm not here to give you any shit. I'm seriously not. I think this is why I was very excited to talk to you was because I really want to talk about this and why you see new games on location. So I was going to say, I see that you operate almost exclusively new games, but you do have two solid states. You have Dolly Parton and Evel Knievel. I just want you to explain to the listeners why you buy the games you do and why do you put them out? And like, why if someone's like, hey, why don't you have this WPC game, this 90s game, or why don't you have some more of these solid states? Tell the listener, honestly, like from the business perspective, tell them why you operate new games.
Sure. As I said, I've been doing this for about 10 years, and I've had a pretty decent variety of eras. Like I've had my Addams Family, and I've had a Funhouse. And as a player, I think they kind of get old. And I think as an operator, the most exciting thing you can do for your location is bring in a brand new game, especially if it's one that's brand new to the entire world. So I got in the routine of every, 4 months, a brand new Stern game would come out and there weren't that many other operators that were doing what I was doing that would be, with the Stern Army, be the first one to have it. So it was always important to me to get the brand new game, be the only location to have it and have that exclusivity. So just over time, my collection became very Stern heavy. But that being said, I've bought a lot of the Chicago gaming ones, like any new release that catches my eye, I like to get just to keep it fresh. And on the other note, like I love my job. I love being an operator. Like I can do the tech work, but I got to be honest with you, it's not my favorite part of it. Like I started this as a hobby business because all I wanted to do was play working pinball.
Yep.
And every time I'm on the job and it's like, okay, I'm done with my work today. I'm going to go play for fun. Sure enough, something is wrong. I got to take the glass off. I'm like always working on pinball machines. And for me, I have it stuck in my mind. If it's an older game, it's going to be more problematic. It's going to be more time, more frustration for me, more parts I have to carry, just more, I'm going to say aggravation. So in my experience, like having new games with parts you can get has made my job a little bit less frustrating.
That's why I asked, because I felt like I knew the answer, but I wanted to talk about it on the show because this is
sure.
Yeah,
these are all very important things to understand about making it your job, especially you, like where you're like, you're a full-time pinball operator. This is how you support your family, right? Like this is how you support
yourself.
Yeah,
that's the thing. I have a family. I don't want to be, screaming at pinball machines at the garage at 9 o'clock at night. Like, I want to have like that balance.
Yeah. You know? So it's like when you buy a new game, you're getting a few things. You're getting much better reliability on average, just because a lot of, even if you're talking about the 90s classics, like the Williams classics, a lot of those boards now are rotting out components, right? Like, a lot of those caps are drying out, right? Bridge rectifiers, they have the famous connector issues that would get toasty and burned up because they'd be running too much voltage. And just general, like they've been out for 30 plus years and just the wear and tear, and they have a lot of physical mechs that are one-offs to their games, which means specialty parts, like you're saying. And so other thing that I don't think you mentioned, but I'll bring up is like a lot of those games are just as expensive as like a new Stern Pro because they're not being made and they're sought after by collectors. And so you're like, okay.
Yeah. When you're looking at it, you're like, it's a hard proposition. Like we love Whitewater. When you're looking at like an $8,000 or $9,000 Whitewater versus a brand new Jaws Premium, you're like, which one's going to be easier for me and which one's going to earn?
Yeah. It'll be easier to maintain. Yeah. More people will play it on location. So you'll make more money and it'll break less. And so as cool as like we talk about on the show all the time, how much we love old games and how much we love varieties of games. And that's sort of, you know, my MO at Wedgehead is like, we always mix shit up. Like, we always have EM, solid states, you know, 90s DMDs, up to the modern shit. We get all the new shit too, or we get all the new Sterns. Like, we really don't dabble outside of that other than Chicago gaming, we do, but we don't go Jersey Jacks and we don't go with Spookies on location. We do have a TNA, but outside of that, like, we don't really. But I think it's just important for the listeners to understand that, like, there's a reason why this happens. And it's like, one, they get played a lot. Two, Sterns, despite what you might see on forums, extremely reliable games to operate.
Yeah. And as a player, I think they're super fun and replayable.
That's
like,
the thing,
I think
a lot of people really just genuinely prefer them.
No, a lot of players really love Sterns and they want to play Sterns. So you got to have the games that people want to play. You're a business.
And I also, I think just as a hobbyist, it's always fun when you have different operators in town, when guys kind of have their own niches. And so if there's one guy that you
know...
I
was just about to mention that,
I was like, if there's one guy you know is always going to have the new release, that's awesome. If there's, you know, guys like Pops we've had on the show previously, and they kind of do some goofy stuff, and they have a lot of, like, old oddball games and some very cool stuff they put out, too. You're like, that's great. The variety is awesome, and it makes for a good pinball scene.
And they brought you up. They're like, well, Mitch already does all the new games, and he keeps them in tip-top shape. So it's like... We'll just go play Mitch's games.
You know, Pops is putting me to shame. They are doing such an incredible job, like, with their location, just the variety of games, like how they rotate them, oddball games. But they've also just built such a community of pinball players that just love each other as much as the location, as much as the games. It's really remarkable to see. And I feel... Like with my new Sterns, I feel so on the outside. I'm like, man, my shit is so whack compared what they're doing. Like, it keeps me up at night how good they are how beloved that location is. I'm like, yo, my places suck.
No, I hope you don't feel like it's natural when you're always like, so many people love this place or whatever. But what you're doing is you guys collectively. And they spoke fondly of you.
Yeah, no, we have a great relationship. I was going to say that we grew Boston as a scene. Like,
yeah, Portland, that's it. You're collectively weaving the fabric of, like, more cool places with good, dedicated operators who are pinball heads that want to provide pinball on location is what makes people get interested in pinball and play in your scene.
And Mitch, if you're ever feeling bad about, like, your lineup versus theirs and feeling like your place isn't as cool, if my first time playing pinball was on a Popeyes, I don't think I would have ever played another game of pinball. So I wouldn't be too self-conscious in that regard.
Yeah, they're
just giving them shit. But
I've put time in on their Popeyes and I'm trying to see the silver lining. I'll let you know how that's going.
They should make that thing a novelty. They should put that thing at $2 a play. Everyone would be like, something special must be going on with this Popeyes. It's $2 a play.
That'd be funny.
Like, sorry, we're trying to keep the mileage down on this one.
Yeah.
She's a collector. Okay, before we're kind of running up on time here, but I really wanted to talk about and bring up your alternate translates. I knew of you before, we spoke a little bit before the show, but I knew of you far before I knew you were an operator or knew you in any capacity of this podcast, because I had seen your Moonwalking Dead, which is Walking Dead. You replaced the translate with a thriller, like Michael Jackson, you know, piece of art. And you also, on that one, you did some modifications to, like, Under the Playfield with some Michael Jackson toys. Did the code swap for the Michael Jackson songs, right?
Yeah. So that was in the early days of Flat Top Johnny's, where I had to be very selective of, like, what game I could actually purchase. So I hemmed and hawed over a Walking Dead Pro and a Star Trek Pro. I'm like, oh, which is the better choice for location? And I would deliberate. I was so new to it. Like, I would spend, like, days, like, keeping myself, what are people going to want? And it was right around the time where the code got updated on Walking Dead and, like, fleshed out the modes.
Nice.
And it was like, oh man, this killer land. So I was like, and I was just recalling now, like with Star Trek, I'm like, oh, it's such a similar Steve Ritchie land. I'm going to go with the interesting Walking Dead. So I get this Walking Dead and I have it at home for a little bit. I'm getting ready to put it on location. And I'm like, I wasn't that familiar with the show. So I'm like watching the show, playing the game. And I'm like, this Well Walker is the ugliest thing. This toy is just hideous. It's just hideous. And I'm just like, there's got to be a better looking zombie toy. And I was like, and I grew up a huge Michael Jackson fan. Like I was born in 82 and I'm just like, Thriller is imprinted in my brain. So I was like, oh, it'd be funny to get a little MJ toy for the Well Walker. And my friend David Shoemaker, another private collector mod master, he helped me install it. And while he was doing that, are you familiar with the pinball browser software?
I am, but for the listeners, that's just software that allows you to replace assets in like the existing code on a pinball machine, correct?
Exactly. Yeah. You can kind of pull up. I just mess around with the audio. You can modify the dots, but I have not done that. But you can look at basically every audio file on the game. And if you know the game inside and out, you can be like, oh, this is the song for the shooter lane. This is the song for that. It's a little bit of figuring out the puzzle, but you can just replace every single sound file. And I just, you know, love of MJ, I just did that. So it made it just, you know, it's just more of a retheme. Like I didn't change anything on the playfield. I added some toys and.
But it does such a good job. It's funny because that's a game that when I got into pinball, I played The Walking Dead. I've never seen the show. I'm just kind of not into, I guess, zombie stuff. So it never really appealed to me too much. But the game's great. Mm. And so it's one of those games that it's like, well, I love this game, but I only buy themes for my house if I like the theme, or games for my house if I like the theme. And then after seeing your Moonwalking Dead, I was like, oh my God, that's perfect. Like you took a game.
Yeah, because
that's
so dark and I just added some lightness to it.
Yeah, it's
but
just
didn't like abandon the theme.
Yep.
It's like just like added some pop to it.
Yeah, and it's a really good marriage of the two ideas. It just works great. I love that thing.
Thank you, man. Like it makes me laugh because the songs really do, like Bicycle Girl is PYT and like it worked really well and it makes me smile every single time I play it.
I wanted to bring up, so I'd seen some other ones from you, and it's funny because every time I would see a post of your games on Reddit or something, and I think I saw Stern NBA that you did a Larry Bird translate for, and I was like,
yeah,
I clicked it. I was like, this looks great. Like, this is another really good one,
you're sounding ignorant. It's Larry Legend, dude. Like, please.
Larry, goddamn Legend.
Yeah,
respect
come on
him,
now.
Man.
You gotta respect the man.
I'll tell you something. It's like, there are some collectors that probably, even before they received the game, they've already spent $3,000 in mods. Like,
yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Totally.
So for me, it usually comes from a place of like, oh, I want to like make this a little bit more palatable for me. Like, as I said, Walking Dead, I thought was like an eyesore, both on the translate and that toy. So I'm like, all right. And then have you ever seen the Stern's NBA translate?
Not a great translate.
It's like the worst picture of every all-star, like Shaq shooting a free throw with his like tongue hanging out, like Yao Ming walking into a telephone pole. It's like it's like a shitty translate. And that one too, like I could modify the music a little bit. And I was like, you know, from Boston, it was going to be at a Boston location. I'm like, oh, let's make it Larry Bird. And like,
hell yeah.
I don't want to change the cabinets and all the decals in the play field. It's just like, I can make this game more special to me personally for like $50. I'm like, I think I'll do it.
What I was going to ask is, are you doing the Moonwalking Dead and this, are you doing like the design work yourself, like actually coming up with the overlays and sending them out to printing, or are you outsourcing?
So Moonwalking Dead, that was the first one I ever did. And have you ever heard of the location in Ohio called the Super Electric?
Yeah, in Cleveland?
Yeah. So they were doing some printing. So I reached out to them and said, here's the image I'm looking for, which was just like a promotional picture from the set of the Thriller video.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I want this with the text up here. And then they printed that for me. But since then, basically like the Larry Bird one, I just found a great image of Larry Bird shooting a three over Michael Jordan.
Just for the people that are listening that don't know this, and I'm not, you know, I'm not from Boston. I'm not a Boston Celtics fan. Larry owned Mike when Larry was playing. I'm just saying that. He did. So I know MJ's the GOAT for most people. Larry owned him. Like, Mike never beat Larry in a playoff series ever.
Yeah. Alan's just trying to win over Boston guys right now.
Hey.
I feel like this is all a big plot to move Wedge over there.
I'm just saying, well, part of my favorite hobbies is, besides pinball, is I really love watching old players talk about how the sausage was made, and I love hearing Larry Bird trash talk stories. It's like one of my favorite things.
He was a legendary trash talker.
Legendary trash talker. And so I'll watch YouTube videos of other NBA players being like, oh man, Larry was bad, dude. Like he would just tell you what he was going to do. And then he would just shoot over do exactly that, make funny, like just. And so And I watched a whole video about how, like, Larry was badder than people remember, and he gets dismissed. But it's like, Jordan was in the league with Larry, and Larry was winning championships, and Jordan wasn't. He didn't start winning championships until Larry Bird retired. So...
So on that one, you took care of things yourself. Where'd you end up getting it printed, if you don't mind me asking?
No, of course not. It's called Print Moz, M-O-Z. So Print Moz. And you have to customize it ahead of time. So you have to provide the image in the correct size.
Gotcha.
But then you can enter, I want this image printed this size. And it's called a backlit translate or backlit film.
Okay.
It's one of the options. And you can just get a translate printed. It's pretty great.
Dude, it's funny because a simple like translate swap to me. So Allen and Rhodes, the owners of Wedgehead, they don't care for really modified games.
I heard them shitting on it. I heard them in their episode just shitting all over it. I took it personally.
They don't like, they like things factory, which I think is fine.
That's
because
they have no imagination.
That's where I'm at. I love seeing alternate translates. We played a Data East checkpoint on the coast recently. That had been rethemed as a Les Schwab Tire Center, which is like a tire distribution.
It's a regional big tire chain center out here in the Pacific Northwest.
And that shit just kills me. I love it. I think it's hilarious every time I see it. And that brings
One's done well.
That brings me to probably your biggest masterpiece, which is the Star Trek with cats.
Yeah, Cat Trek.
Are those your cat? Where did the cats come from? What was the story with that one?
That's an artist that did a book, those cat images. So I borrowed that one.
Oh man, that is so good. It's so
right, that was one I saw at a Barnes & Noble. I was like, oh my god, I gotta put this, because that's if you look at the Star Trek Pro, that's like such an uninspired backlash. It's just actors looking stoically. And I was like, well, we can do better.
The backlash is bad for sure. I will say, so yes, we're on the record as we don't usually mod any of our games in that way for sure. But I will say in our defense, most guys that do it really bad. Like they don't look into finding the film, right? Like they don't look into thinking about like, oh, lights are going to have to shine through this, so it looks washed out and shitty. Mm. They do bad or poorly taste art, or they're just like, what if it was this? But with like babes and like skimpy bikinis and stuff. Yeah, and they always make like the sexy alternate back glasses.
There's a lot of bad ones out there. And that's why I kind of wanted to highlight yours, because I love your translates.
Yeah, yours
Thank
are good.
You. No, I learned from a previous mistake of I bought a alternate translate off of eBay once for a World Poker Tour. And it was just like you said, it was like, you know, objectifying women. And I don't even want to describe it, but basically it looked like two jacks were like grabbing at this girl, and I didn't even see it, and people were not pleased, and I was like, oh, I gotta pull this game. So I've learned from my mistakes, like try to think of like if my mom is gonna show up and play this, would she be proud of her boy?
Absolutely.
Yep, it's a good way to handle it, I feel like.
And then she looks at the Michael Jackson one, she's like, I did a number raising you.
Well, Mitch, I think we've had a nice good chat about you and how you got into the scene and some of your taste. And I hope your big personality comes through for the listeners.
Oh shit. Thanks guys.
Yeah. I want to say like follow Mitch on social media. He does a lot of cool, which I didn't even know you before a couple of weeks ago when you had reached out.
I take some long breaks from social media.
You do a lot of dancing and fun stuff and fun
Don't
videos.
Tell anybody about that.
You put it on the internet. You put it out there.
Well, that was one of my questions for you, like in the operator vibe of like, how do you guys keep from kind of getting burnt out by it? And like, how do you keep yourself having fun? Like, how does the grind not get to you?
As far as operating or as far as social media in particular?
But all of it, but like... but you guys are running your location. You're there all the time. You're interacting with people. You're interacting with games. Mm-hmm. And on top of it, you have to do all your marketing, all your events. It's a lot of work. And I think people sometimes don't realize how dedicated you have to be to still bring that joy, because there can be some frustrating days being an operator. And I feel it sometimes.
I was fixing games right before I came over here. I stopped by the bar and it's normally my day off, but I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to fix some games because they're down, and then I'll come over here and I'll record this podcast. Social media, I don't think we're particular. I do the social media. I've talked to this about Alex and to other operators is I'm not particularly good at it, and I don't particularly like it. But what I try to do with our social media is I try, I'm really bad at like being like, hey, we have a special thing. Hey, come try out this new cocktail or this new burger or whatever. Like, I'm really bad at that because I'm like, yeah, that's what everyone does. You know, like, I'm like, hey, everyone does that. Everyone sees it. Yeah, they know what we have. They know when we're open, right? But it's like, but you need to do that. But it's like, I would always tell Alex, I was like, part of the best part about running your own business is that it's yours for better or for worse. And I was like, I'm going to work all the time. I'm not going to make a lot of money, but it damn sure should feel like me at the end of the day. So I always think about it like, for better or for worse, Wedgehead is me, right? Like in my business partner, Rhodesy. But it's like, I spend so much time there and now we do the podcast and we do all this stuff. It's like, it's a reflection of me, warts and all, right? Like my good character traits and my bad character traits are evident, right? Like I don't want to run a corporate arcade in any fucking way. Like those places are like death to me. Like I can't stand walking to those places and like, just like, this is cornball shit to me. No offense to anyone listening. I guess I should preface that. but I don't think those people are really listening to the Pinball Podcast. They're operating games and they got the model down and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I think it's, for me, the burnout is, especially with social media, it's like, I just try to focus on just the stuff I like. And I just try to make sure that I'm always like, all right, well, don't be too abrasive. You know, like, don't be too much, because I'll do things like,
yeah, this is Alan filtered.
Yeah, this is me filtered and edited. no, but I like, even when I was talking to Ty and Daniel, the guys over at Pops, they were like, we really like following you because you'll call motherfuckers out. And I'm like, really?
Yeah,
like
I love that about you guys.
And I was like, man, that's like me edited, huh? Because I remember I posted something where I was like, yo, Stern, what the fuck's up with the service outlet? Why is it in the back box? This is stupid. Like, I need to solder things. Why did you move something that was in the bottom of the cabinet for, you know, 60 years? And they were like, I can't believe you said that. And I was like, well, why wouldn't I say that? Like, we love Stern. Like, we buy Stern games, they do well for us. But I was like, we're a customer. Like, yeah, why? Like, what the fuck is the service outlet doing back there?
Because it saved them 9 cents of wire.
I know, dude. And it's annoying. I hear about it from operators. So the operators are like, I'm so glad you said that. I'm so glad you said that. I'm so glad you say these things. And they're like, you call people out. And I was like, I hope I'm not just a person that just calls people out, you know, because I don't want to be that necessarily. But I do have I don't have the fear of like a corporate arcade, because it's me and my business partner, Rhodesy, and Rhodesy's a good friend of mine. And we have similar personalities in the important ways, you know? And so Wedgehead's a reflection of us. Like I always say, for better or for worse, like when I talk to Electric Bat people, or when I talk to the Pops people, or we're talking to you right on these operator spotlights, it's like, our businesses are a reflection of us. Like, I don't want to do these with people who I don't see something in, or I don't admire. Like, I'm not here to do corporate arcade BS. Like, I'm here to talk to like cool operators that are passionate about pinball and what they do. That shines through to me immediately. Like, if I go on somebody's thing, I could be like, this person's genuine, or like whatever. Even if it's like stuff like, you're like, you love all the new Sterns, right? And you operate those games, you're like, oh, you're gonna roast me. I was like, I'm not here to roast you. Like, it's like, those aren't my preference. But also, like, we operate those games because, and I know why we fucking operate those games, because people love those games, right? Like, so it's like, I'm like the oldest 37-year-old man you'll ever meet, where I'm like, ah, it's got to be solid states and EMs. Like, that's what gets me, like, jacked up about pinball, right? But as a business, it's like, I'm just like, well, I want to see everything. And I want to see people that are genuinely excited about pinball, throwing events, doing it day in, day out, because it is a hard job. It's a lot of work. Like, being a pinball operator is a lot of fucking work for not a lot of money. And I know some people will be like, oh man, well, Mitch charges $1 for his games. He must be loaded. I don't know you personally, but I guarantee you're not doing that. So just for the listeners at home, because there are some location pinball players that are just like, man, I can't believe they're doing this to us. They think you're like the sheriff of Nottingham from the old Robin Hood cartoon, where you just bending people over, the little kid with the crutch, and he bends him over and he pat his cast, and like a coin pops out that he was trying to hide.
That's what they think of me around here.
Nah, I hope not. There's something to be said about quality and always getting new games and getting games. I mean, because we even have that in the Portland market, where there's the Next Level out in Hillsboro, and they do a great job, and they'll get some of the Jersey Jack games, but none of the other operators really buy them anymore because
Yeah, it's just a hard sell.
They're expensive and people don't play them, but then some customers be like, how come I never see these games? And I go,
you wouldn't like what we'd have to charge for them is really the biggest answer.
Yeah. And so it's like people should be happy that someone's taken a flyer on any of these games. You know, like Alex is a big Spooky fan. And so he's like, you know, he owns a couple. So his money is where his mouth is. But it's like, as far as like us operating them, you know, it's like, hey, it's a hard sell, man.
Yeah.
It's hard when we could just buy a Stern that we know is like reliable and will earn well and will hold its value. And
people will like playing.
Yeah. Not more than just like once ago.
Sounds like I've converted. You're going to change the name from Wedgehead to Stern LCD.
Spike 2 Stern.
That's a killer name for a bar. Yeah. Yeah, I'm hitting the Spike 2s tonight.
Mitch, I just want to thank you for joining us on the show.
Guys, thank you, man. This was a blast.
And for everyone that's listening, the goal of all of these, my message at the end of each one of these episodes is wherever you are, go out, play some pinball on location, support your local operator. And if you're in Boston, go play some of Mitch's games. Go to Roxy's, Flat Top Johnny's, or Double Bull. Check him out. Play some of these cool premium games that he puts out there. And the next time you're playing one of his Dolly Parton or his Evel Knievel, just think of us. Because that's what I'd be playing when I was out there. Okay?
Hell yeah.
But yeah, thanks again, Mitch. For everyone else listening, we appreciate you listening. Until next time, good luck. Don't suck.
Don't suck.